This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 3rd of April, 2023. Markets in a very different place coming into this morning than they were on Friday when it was all about celebrating a soft PCE inflation data point in the U.S., especially that core services ex shelter reading coming in at 0.27% for the month of February, and then the downward revision of the hot January number on that metric, which was revised down to 0.49 from 0.58%. helping boost risk sentiment further after we'd cleared these key technical hurdles in something like the NASDAQ 100, which we show on slide two at 13,000 plus, or it was actually ahead of 13,000, but we cleared 13,000 the prior day and extended quite aggressively into the close on Friday, also into quarter end, yields dipping a little bit. And then we have this big shock announcement, Peter, over the weekend of an OPEC cut. We'll get to Ole later on the analysis there, but let's just briefly wrap where we are with equities after this pretty impressive run into the weekend last week.
Yeah, it was very impressive to say the least. I mean, we rallied 1.4% in the S&P 500 futures, and we ended on the continuous futures series up 4.1% for last month. And just an impressive month with a banking crisis, a historic repricing of bond yields, you know, a deposit flight from small banks to large banks. And here we are. We are higher. And it was also the month of extreme hype around AI technology. And I think retail investors showed again that they are back in the game, as we've talked about on this podcast in the early parts of the year. The animal spirits were released in January. We had a little bit of setback in February and then the shock in March, but they came back. Buy the dip has proven to be very successful. And if we look at slide two and the theme basket's performance, we can see that some of the themes that really did not do very well for the months, but some of the things that really did well were, of course, the semiconductors, mega caps, and gaming. All three themes have a considerable overlap to this AI hype, and then the Chinese consumer technology and luxury basket, luxury being the proxy on China if you don't want to own the Chinese companies or stocks themselves. So that has done like extremely well as well. And then the green transformation in here sits the some of the electric vehicle stocks, and which have also done very well. So I think this month, John, is going to shaping up to be very interesting. I think it's all about, you know, the credit conditions as we've talked about, and then are the data going to lean in favor of a recession or not, and what will that mean for the pricing of bond yields? And because that will set the direction, I think, for equities.
Yeah, and also the pricing of equities because of the earnings cycle. Is there such a thing as the earnings cycle anymore if we're going to have a recession? Of course there is, but it's, you know, it's a rhetorical question, but that's an interesting treatment of the market, just the singular focus on rates, it seems. I felt it was odd that the dollar was quite firm into the end of the week. Perhaps some of that, this quarterly, end of quarter flows, et cetera, that had run sort of lower into the last couple until Friday itself. So that may be a month-end phenomenon, but it did make some sense to see the dollar picking up a bit with the risk off we saw on this OPEC cut announcement over the weekend. That was not anticipated. And just briefly to round out my space, looking at slide three in the FX overview, Aussie still in a slump. It just, you know, what are we doing with Aussie here? We're celebrating, you know, we have a huge surge in risk sentiment. We're supposed to be looking at a Chinese reopening, and Aussie just cannot get a lift here. Part of that is the RBA, and we do have an RBA meeting up Tuesday. So into the very, very early European hours this morning, they're making their announcement. And essentially, and part of the reason the Aussie is weak, again, is that RBA and its insistence on, you know, moving towards a pause, which it indicated it wanted to do at the March 7th meeting. If you look at that Aussie dollar chart there on slide three, that really big last sell-off bar that was just ahead of the lows there, just below 66, was on their announcement, and there are no expectations. There's some surveys that suggest there's some looking for a potential hike, but the market is pricing for nothing tonight from the RBA, and essentially nothing more looking forward either, that they're at the end of their tightening cycle here. So just, you know, Aussie unable to get a lift there, and technically I would certainly want it to be pushing above that 200-day moving average for it to be showing any signs of life versus the U.S. dollar. We also have a RBNZ meeting up later this week. I'll preview that one tomorrow, but it doesn't seem like FX is the space where we're seeing a lot of moves here. Even something like this oil announcement, not feeding that much into the so-called petrocurrencies like Nokia in Canada, partly because they then get sold off on the weak risk sentiment angle. But Ola, we need to get over to you because this was a big announcement. It was clearly not anticipated, and it came at a technically interesting time because we were sort of bumping up back close to the old range. They cut 1 million barrels. What does it mean for oil, into your mind, and what's going on here?
Well, first of all, it means that we're back to the 80s. So the sell-off that we saw last month is all behind us. Short sellers during that momentum breakout has been penalized once again. And it's also just, I think, just highlighting a market where OPEC is concerned about what we're all concerned about. In the recent data, we've seen that the market has gone from pricing rate hikes to pricing rate cuts, seeing an incoming slowdown. And we have to remember as well that most of the 2 million barrel plus demand growth that has been expected for this year by EIA, IEA, and OPEC, all three of them, is backloaded into the second half of this year. So with the gathering clouds or the emerging dark clouds we're seeing right now, basically make them to come up with this preemptive strike, basically in order to support the most priced asset. As I said, hurting a few short sellers in the process is they'll take that as a bonus. And at the same time, they're also seeing the growth in U.S. shale oil production is stalling. So basically, they have this market, they have this playing field in the pretty well wrapped up for now, so they can control the price action by cutting and by taking barrels out and adding barrels whenever that's necessary. So price wise, it's left us with a massive gap in the market. It's not normal we see those kind of gaps in the crude oil markets. So this was clearly a weekend event. So we have, if you look at the Brent chart that I put in on slide 4 here, we can see we're above that downtrend from the highs back in March last year, following the Ukraine attack or the Russian attack on Ukraine. That can hold. That's coming in around 83, and then we have the gap all the way down to 80. But I think overall we'll see the market stabilize here in the 80s now. There is a risk, obviously, we can go higher, but this is a cut from a vantage point of economic weakness, I would say. So we'll see we'll have to keep on watching the economic data as we go forward. And Peter just highlighted this morning as well, we saw the manufacturing PMI from South Korea, overnight. It dropped to the lowest in 6 months. So where is that Chinese recovery right now? It's not as strong as we anticipate. And OPEC can obviously see that in the kind of demand data they get for crude oil from China.
Yeah, we'll need on that PMI. A good point there. Maybe we need to give another month, the April round, for the demand to show up in South Korean data, but as well the German manufacturing PMI this morning out expected. It's the final version, so we already got the preliminary one. Below 45, those numbers need to change a little bit if the economy, the global economy, is still working in any way resembling the way it used to. But you also have some thoughts on grains here, heading into your next slide there to round out the commodity space.
Yeah, exactly. There's a spillover effect from the higher oil price into grains as well, because we have to remember both corn and soybeans are being used increasingly towards biofuel production. So when the cost of other fuels go up, then that has a supporting impact on corn and soybeans as well. And the move higher this morning comes after, on top of the rally we saw on Friday, when the planting and quarterly stocks reports painted a fairly supportive picture, especially for soybeans. You can see that on the insert on slide 5, that the acreage that the farmers are going to plant soybeans on this year was lower than what the market had been anticipated. The corn acreage is actually higher, but at the same time, we've seen quite strong import or export demand to China recently, and that's underpinning price there. In addition to that, I just put in a small insert from the weekly cut report. You can see that we had a record amount of selling at the early parts of March into corn, to the point that we reached a net short, and even last week that net short was still there, much reduced. But again, the traders are not prepared, has not been prepared for the strong recovery that we've seen in corn as per the chart as well.
All right. And the other announcement we got, speaking of oil demand and the risk of oil demand falling, we have EVs ramping up everywhere. We've talked a bit about this. Peter, this Q1 deliveries of Tesla, quite impressive. I mean, the percentage above what was estimated was perhaps not that crazy, but this is still a huge growth number overall for the company, isn't it?
It is, and it just shows you the adoption of electric vehicles is just continuing at a blistering pace. Tesla will, as a company, exceed the 2 million annualized delivery level this year. There's no doubt about it. It sits at 1.7 right now, and it's in an arms race with BYD in China to take the throne on the EVs. And the big question this year and the coming years will be whether Volkswagen can keep up its pace, and even more dramatic, Toyota, that for so many years were tinkering with fuel cells and, you know, plug-in cars. They seem to be accepting that they made a wrong decision here, and they're doing everything they can to get back into the game. And that, of course, could either be a game changer, or will just show that Toyota is in trouble in terms of, you know, market shares in the future, because that is what matters, of course, to investors. And Ole sent me over the chat an interesting headline that came over the wire, because one of the things that has been extremely positive for electric vehicles this year has been the 62% decline in lithium carbonate since the peak in November last year. So that has created a tailwind and enabled Tesla and other EV makers to slash prices without sacrificing operating margin on their cars. So this, of course, is fueling demand even more. But there has now been this news coming out that the 10 largest lithium miners in China has agreed to put a price floor basically under lithium, and we all know that, you know, that doesn't really work. It might work in a local domestic market for a brief time, but lithium will become a global market over time, and Australia is ramping up the production of lithium pretty dramatically. And also we see that same in Africa. Lithium production in Chile and the US is also accelerating. So I think it's an effort here to try to stem the bleeding, but it will be short-lived, because if you set a price floor in the Chinese market, but you can import it way cheaper over time from foreign markets, that price floor will not have a lot of value unless it's upheld by the government through some type of you know, tariffs on imports and lithium or whatever to support the domestic industry. And then one of the other stocks that we're highlighting is Siemens Energy. It seems to be gathering a lot of positive excitement among sell-side analysts, telling you or explaining in their various notes that the Siemens Energy company is strongly positioned for this, what they call a power boom in Europe, which is to come because of the electrification, which will demand electric production, electricity production in Europe to triple in the over the next decade, as Europe, in its effort to lowering the consumption of gas, will switch from a lot of natural gas heating to air-to-water heat pumps, which runs on electricity, but also EVs will require a massive amount of electricity. As Ole has one pointed out, if you have a normal household here in Europe, then if you add one Tesla, then you double your annual electricity consumption. And then if you add an air-to-water heat pump, you add another 50% to it, so thereby you triple basically the total electricity consumption. So it's big numbers, and Siemens Energy is definitely one of the ones to watch. In terms of slide 7 and the earnings to watch this week, not a lot of names that get me excited at all. So we're just recycling this slide we did on Friday. You can see the operating income in the stock 600 and the S&P 500. Clearly a lot of momentum in Europe, and it's going to be very interesting to see whether that continues in Q1 when we get those numbers out. And I think the US financials will kick it off in 2 weeks from now, and then we'll get all these Q1 earnings releases, which are going to be very exciting, given that the margin pressure haven't been as strong as expected in the last quarter. They're there, and mostly for technology companies and S&P 500, but less so for European companies. And it's just this whole cost pressure, it's going to be interesting to see whether they continue. There was a story recently that, you know, the lack of competition, the very high industry concentration, a lot of industries is propping up these operating margins, and they have used inflation as an excuse to actually increase their profit margins. So ongoing theme, we'll be watching that in the weeks to come.
Yeah. And on the Tesla front, on that chart, just note there on slide 6, it's a weekly chart, but on your dailies as well. So the 40-week or 200-day moving average coming into view, it's been pretty critical, at least on a multi-week close basis. As you can see there, it tried to sort of get back above it on that rally in late 2022, sort of succeeded 1 week here, 1 week there, but never really traded back above that 40-week moving average. So that's coming up, not that many percentage points above where it was trading and closed on Friday. All right, let's look at the week ahead in terms of the calendar. As mentioned, the RBA, they confirmed the market's view of really no guidance for further hiking or further tightening for the cycle. They were still had, to be fair, in that March 7th statement, that they were still looking in the direction of tightening, but we're clearly trying to insert some language around potentially pausing here and there in the process. Do they confirm that? But there was a Melbourne Institute inflation gauge out overnight, 5.7% versus the prior and cycle high of 6.3%. RBNZ on Wednesday, the ISMs, this ISM manufacturing is up today, sub 48 still expected for that. The gauge has been quite low for quite some time. ISM services should be more interesting, but that I think there's something problematic with that survey itself. Perhaps it's not calibrated correctly. If supposedly below 50 is contraction, above 50 is expansion, but some argue that 52, 53 is more likely the cutoff point there. I'll be watching that one. And then, of course, the latest jobs data. Unfortunately for us, the impact of this banking turmoil, and if we're going to see a unfolding credit crunch from the funding side squeezing banks, that is going to take many months to play out. So I don't think we're going to be seeing anything, at least specifically associated with Silicon Valley Bank, et cetera, in this March data front, these March data numbers. But if we do see something there, then of course it could suggest there already is some slowing starting to come in prior to the impact of that. But we'll have a look at it. For now, it's an interesting jolt to the markets that got over the weekend here with this OPEC cut and crude oil suddenly several dollars higher per barrel, just at a time when it was trying to run higher and break away to the upside in sentiment-wise in equities. So we'll try to stay on top of things, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.